Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right, it's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to, the show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up, it's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here! And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but before we do that, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
SCUPOJOE.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
JOEVEC@bellsouth.net.
Okay, once again, I want to welcome all my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. My thanks to my good friend Ben Birch for hosting my archives there. Also, my listeners at rantradio.com and cadronpictures.com.
Okay, before I begin, I do have some sad news. I found out from Ben Birch at the White Rose Society, whiteroseSociety.org, that radiopower.org is no more. Mr. Birch is taking over the streaming of the shows that were on there. Tony Trupiano, Tom Hartman, Randy Rhodes, and all the others. So I am very sorry that that happened. I wish I could have done more. Obviously, I'm not capable of doing much money-wise for them, but I wish I could have done more to help them. I sent them stuff. I did promos for all of the different shows that were on Radio Power, and I did I sent them all off to there. But I don't know if that did any good or not. So I really don't know what's going on. It's just sad that to see that these things happen. Money, of course, is the whole deal, and I don't know anything. Somebody in the comment board suggested that Bart Kopp and I contact George Soros to see if we can get money. But Mr. Soros is a smart investor. He only gives money to things that he thinks are going to make money or do a cause. With 50 or so hits a day, I really don't think I'm going to make much of an impact. And Bart Kopp is a pay-only show, but if he had money, I'm sure he'd put it up for free. Excuse me. Professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. But I think it's kind of sad that that these things are happening mainly because of money. Money is just a huge thing for us, mainly because we lack it. I wanted to talk a little bit about my appearance on Air America Radio last week, and I don't want to bring it up to sound like I'm bragging, because to be quite honest, I think once they saw a little bit more about the show, I think they kind of regretted it, having me on there. And I listened to the tape of myself, and I didn't think I sounded that great, as I mentioned in my last show. And someone on the in the comments board, in fact, one of the right-wingers who comes on sometimes and gives me shit, he said that, I shouldn't worry about it. It's my voice and my style of talking that makes me unique, and if I became a professional at it, that I wouldn't sound the same. He said maybe Randy Rhodes and Tom Hartman and all those people, maybe they started out as working-class people, but they're certainly not that anymore. And you can tell that when they're talking about it, they're talking about it. It sounds kind of fake. And maybe that's true and maybe it isn't. I know that these guys are much more smooth than I am as far as speaking voice is concerned. And I just try to be clear. And I listened to myself and I thought that the biggest problem that I have was that I was having trouble clarifying an idea. And I always do better when I can think these things out a little bit. Actually, I do a little bit better when I do interviews, which reminds me, I've got a couple of interviews coming up. I've got one, in fact, in the next segment with a surprise guest. Nobody nobody like famous or anything like that, but somebody who has been on the show once before, but who I brought on for a particular reason, and you'll find that out in the next segment. I've talked with Mark Satin, who wrote the book The Radical Middle, and he's going to be on again. I really like talking to him. He's a real nice guy to talk to. And according to this, he was denounced by the head of the Democratic Leadership Council. I was one of those organizations, and he considered that a real feather in his cap. So we're going to talk about that and about Ronald Reagan and about some other things. And probably that's going to be next week. I'm talking with, hopefully, American Stranger from TakeBackTheMedia.com, and I'm going to start doing more help for them and hopefully get more in touch with them. They used to do, I don't know if they still do it or not, they used to have on their website like these little 30-second ads for what was next on their show, and I played one once, but they don't really have that anymore. BuzzFlash does their weekly thing. I'd like to do more little commercials. I'll do the free, whenever Bart Cop has a free sample, I will put that on and urge people to subscribe. Bart Cop is bartcop.com. Take Back the Media is takebackthemedia.com, and it will take you into their new, improved website, which still has some glitches in it, but they're good people over there, and they've been doing this for a while. In fact, I think they supply news to other sources. I might do something like that. I like doing the BuzzFlash thing, partly because it takes up 3 minutes, and I don't have to talk, and I like just having other stuff in there. Now, it's been an interesting couple of weeks for me, and actually the last week or so, I'm doing something that I've never really done before, and that's take pills. I'm not much for medicine. I've never been much for taking pills, but I have been having problems with my digestive system, which is why I had to go to, I don't want to say the hospital, diagnostic imaging, which is the fancy word for x-ray. And, you know, they gave me these pills to take basically to lower my blood sugar, and I've got a thing, and I believe I mentioned this in my last show, I've got a thing where I'm measuring my blood sugar every time. And it started out at like 188, which is pretty high, and it's down to like the 130s, 140s now, which isn't too bad. But I'm taking, what the hell am I taking? I'm taking Zestril. Well, actually, I'm taking Lisinopril, which is a generic for Zestril. I am taking Famotidine, which is a generic for Pepcid. And I am taking Metformin, which is a generic for Glucophage. And this one is a big one. This is 500 milligrams. It's a fucking horse pill is what it is. It's a huge thing. But I've always had problems with the gag reflex. And I figured out a way to get the pills down without having to crush them up, because I don't like crushing up pills. They're not designed to be crushed up for the most part. And I've been putting them in water and drinking them that way. But I don't like doing that because the taste is just awful. And you always get a bunch of powder and stuff that you're really not getting the whole pill. You're not getting the whole deal from that. And in this case, being able to swallow the pill the way it's supposed to be swallowed, I'm getting the full effect of the pill. And I'll tell you, I feel better. I really do feel better. I don't have as much acid reflux as I was having before. and I don't have as much trouble breathing as I was having before. And I'm wondering if now maybe my quote-unquote throat problems were really less of that than they were of a stomach problem with antacids or with acid reflux and stuff like that. For those of you who don't know acid reflux is basically when some stuff from the stomach comes back up and gets into your throat. And that's hydrochloric acid. That shit burns. That shit really, really burns. So I only worked 3 days last week, and I actually finished the latest show on Friday, a day after I should have gotten it finished. I put a repeat on Rant Radio. Tonight will be a new show, and I'll be in the Rant Radio chat room if you're listening there, and or if you're typing in there, you'll see it. And also been doing my new show, Audio Hell, which is on cammafia.com, cam-mafia.com, and that went over pretty well. I actually went live last week, and I might actually start doing the Sunday show for Rant Radio live. That way I can have some things going. I still want to try to do 2 shows a week, and I'm going to give my usual complaint about how I never have enough time for anything, but generally during the weekend I have some time to do stuff. But another interview, back to the interviews, and this is what I talk about, I ramble a bit, but that's all right. It's my fucking show. I can ramble if I want. a gentleman named David Bornstein, who wrote a book called How to Change the World, which is about what he called social entrepreneurs, about people who just basically take matters into their own hands because they feel compelled to. And there's some very, very good stories in there, some very good radical middle stuff, too, if I might say so. And as soon as we can make the arrangements, I'm going to interview Mr. Bornstein, and we'll talk to that. I like doing interviews. I enjoy talking to people. It makes the time go by faster. It's more interesting because otherwise you're just listening to me yak on about nothing in particular. So, but anyway, like I said, I only worked 3 days last week, and I was very surprised that when I gave the second attendance slip to my boss, because you have to fill out a form to say, hey, you know, I'm going to be out this day, and I have to bring a doctor's note. And I said, I'm sorry I had to take Friday off, too, because I took Monday off, but, you know, they scheduled me for this. And he said, don't worry about it. Take care of your health first. That's most important. And you generally don't get that type of attitude. Now, I bitch about my work sometime, but, you know, in general, Siemens is a very, very good company. In fact, it was funny. When I went to the diagnostic imaging place, when I went there to get the x-rays, and basically that's what diagnostic imaging is. And they can do movies as well, and they had me drink all this white crap so they can see it in my system. I noticed that the machine they were using was built by Siemens. Siemens is a very high-tech company. We work in the armpit of Siemens, just a very simple steel manufacturing plant. And I said, hey, I work for Siemens. I work for that company. They said, well, you should feel pretty confident. And I said, well, not if it was built by the people I work with. So people I work with are pretty good, but they couldn't handle a high-tech item such as this. We build some pretty simple things. I really love my new job over there. I like being in assembly. It's much less stressful than being on the paint line. I'm a little worried about getting laid off because that's the type of jobs that they generally lay people off of. But I'm really not particularly worried about it. I figure if they lay me off, they lay me off. It gives me more time to do the radio show while I'm looking for work. Now that I have a car, too, that will make it easier to get to work. And all that. I'm really, things are going pretty well right now. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. My money situation is stabilizing. I'm actually kind of low right now because we've had a lot of extra expenses lately. Although I did get a small raise, and I'm making a little bit more money a week, and that's fine. I'm making what now about $12.76 per hour, which isn't too bad, really. Not too bad at all. It's a lot more than I was making. Well, it is more than I was making when I was at MCSI, which is the last big company that I worked for. And it's a lot more than I was making when I was making Nextel. But Nextel was commission. And, you know, I talked about different types of jobs, and I don't recall ever talking about sales. But sales is a completely different animal, and salespeople are completely different animals from regular working people. For the most part, they tend to be competitive because they have to be. And I'm really not that way. I think that's my problem with trying to be a salesman. I'm not a very aggressive salesperson. I'm a very good customer service person. Don't get me wrong. I'm good with dealing with customers, and I like to tell the truth. I like to be honest about certain things, which, of course, sometimes makes you a bad salesman. I don't mean to disparage being sales like that, but if your object is to sell a lot of stuff, being honest doesn't always cut it. And it hurts your reputation if you just can't get the sales. And more than anything else, more than any kind of job or any kind of business, your boss is going to look at basically what your numbers at, what your numbers are, how much are you selling. And that's going to be the important thing because, frankly, that's what their job is to do, is to sell things. And I've just never been very good at that. I did a little telemarketing work when I worked for, Mike Malloy. And it just wasn't my cup of tea. Cold calling people, really, I have a phobia about that, really. I get on there, and I try to call up, and I just can't. And, you know, that's no good. I wasn't too bad at it. I mean, if you listen to me speak, when I'm reading stuff that's in the paper or things like that, I can speak very clearly. And in fact, I've been thinking about recording some of my stuff and sending it off to places where they do like books on tape and things like that, because I think I do pretty well for that. That's a good way to make a living, and I could still probably do the radio show doing that, so long as my throat holds out. I got to talk to George Lowe and find out what eye, ear, nose, and throat man that he goes to, because obviously his voice is his life, much more than mine, and he really needs to have the best people available working on that. So, but overall, it's been a good couple of weeks, and Like I was saying, I do enjoy the job that I'm doing. I like working with my hands like that. And it's busy, but not crazy. And generally, things go pretty smoothly. And I'm very happy with just the way everything is working out there. I spent all the 3 days I was working, I was basically using one of these hydraulic screws. They have these, they hang straight down. And they're not electric, they're hydraulic. And their torque is set a certain way, and you just basically stick the screw in and like that. And I'll do 3 or 4 screws and just slide it on down to the next person. And generally, the boxes that we were building were fairly complex. They were boxes that had a couple of circuit breaker switches and also had a thing where you can slap a meter in there. And they were fairly complex boxes. So it took a little while for them to do, and they had a lot of different people. So it meant the line went fairly slowly. We could only put out maybe a couple of hundred of these a night, although if we had a lot of really, really good people there, we could be putting out a lot more. But it takes more time to do the things that I need to do. I was putting in 4 screws, and that takes more because you have to set the things up, and you got to put the screw in there and move it on. And if it was running really, really fast, I probably would not have been able to keep up. Speed is not my best thing. Speed is not my best thing. And I get in trouble for that with that at work from time to time because they expect you not only to be good but to be fast. And especially when you're talking about an assembly job. But the speed the line is going is just fine as it is right now. But I like my work and I like what I'm doing right now. And everything's going pretty good for me personally. Although it's still going to take me a while to get caught up. I really do need to save up enough money so I can declare bankruptcy. Before I finish up with the segment, let me again once again ask people in the Atlanta area, if you listen to the show and you live in the Atlanta area, give me an email, joevec@bellsouth.net, if you want to help out to do the show. I need a couple of people. I'd like to have someone to come on the show with me and just be someone I can talk to. Not necessarily a co-host, but like a producer. And that's what I need, is a producer. And I need someone to help me do a little research and, you know, figure out stories that that I can use. So this is an open call, stories I can talk about. This is an open call for people. Call me, email me, joevec@bellsouth.net. Let's get a production crew available, because that way when we have a production crew we can sell the show better. Also, one of those people needs to be the publicity person. I need someone to publicize the show. The reason why I only get 50 hits a day is because I don't have the time to do the publicity. Publicity is hard work, and it takes constant effort to keep the thing out, to keep the name out there, and I just really can't do that. I do what I can as far as getting on to Rant Radio and Cam Mafia and whatever the shows that I'm getting some exposure from, but the fact of the matter is I need a full-time publicity person, or at least someone who's going to dedicate themselves to that. Anyway, let me end this here. I've got, like I said, a special guest in the studio for the next segment. In the meantime, we've got our friends from BuzzFlash.com. So, Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Well, well, well. The life of the uptight rectum wing of the GOP, Phyllis Schlafly, is still backing sex club swinging Illinois Republican U.S. Senate candidate Jack Ryan. It doesn't seem to bother Schlafly, the self-righteous guardian of John Birch Society faux morality, that her man forced his former wife to visit sex clubs against her will and urged her to perform a sex act on him in public. It also doesn't appear to bother Virginia Republican Senator George Allen, who was still scheduled to appear at a fundraiser for the curly-haired and kinky Ryan. You know, it's not really that odd that Republicans would support a morally questionable Ryan. Bill Frist and the Republicans are hanging on to control of the Senate by a sliver of a margin, and they can't afford to lose the Illinois seat now held by Peter Fitzgerald. Interestingly, for a divorced family values candidate, Jack Ryan says he sees nothing particularly unsavory in his recently disclosed divorce papers. "Let's take a big step back," he said. "What's in those documents is that I propositioned my wife in an inappropriate place. What our GOP Hypocrite of the Week doesn't mention is that his former wife, TV actress Jeri Ryan, says that Jacko forced her to go to sex clubs against her wishes, and not just once. Indeed, Ryan may have dug his own grave with Illinois GOP insiders because he lured his wife into an avant-garde nightclub in Paris, France. A Republican at an avant-garde nightclub in Paris? Why, that's worse than a Republican senator enjoying some prostitution at the Mustang Ranch in Nevada or a massage parlor in Paris, Texas. If you're a Republican and you're going to get down and kinky, don't do it in France. It'll take the starch out of Karl Rove's efforts to put a beret on John Kerry's head. Multimillionaire Jack Ryan had claimed during the Republican primary that he didn't want his divorce file unsealed because it would harm his son. However, an attorney for Ryan's wife said in a court filing that Ryan wanted parts of the divorce file to remain sealed because he was, quote, concerned it could negatively impact his political aspirations and embarrass him. So, while Ryan was claiming to protect his son from tales of public sex, whips, and chains, it was apparently only his future with the GOP party that he was concerned about. My, my, my. You know, the Illinois Republican poobahs shouldn't get this guy to withdraw. They should run him for president. He has the perfect, morally hypocritical lifestyle to be an ideal Republican candidate. Until next week, just remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
And welcome back to the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, that URL for the blog is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And welcome again, my listeners, at rantradio.com and at cadronpictures.com. I've got a special guest today, if you can call her that. This is my wife, Kathy. Say hi, Kathy.
Hello, everybody.
And my wife was actually on the show once before. I was discussing religion, and she was here, and she wanted to get in on it. So we shared a mic that time, and she is on the red mic. The red mic is my guest mic. And welcome aboard, Kathy.
Thank you, honey.
Well, the reason why Kathy is on the show last night is because of her background and what we did last night. Now, get your minds out of the gutter. Let me explain that my wife, her family mostly, but for most of her life, she considered herself to be a Republican. And that was partly because of religious reasons. She believed at the time, at any rate, that the Democrats were against religion, or that the Republicans, at the very least, were more for a moral standing lifeline, that sort of crapola there. But at any rate, she believed that very strongly, and it would have been very difficult to her for someone to have talked her out of that. And then she met me. And the reason why she's here is because we went together to see Fahrenheit 9/11 last night. Now, I owe her an apology because there were movies that she wanted to see that I never took her to see, partly because of other reasons. The Passion of the Christ in particular, which she really wanted to see, and that I had very little desire to see. However, I would have seen it if the opportunity had presented itself. I don't even know if it's still playing in the theaters now. A lot of times movies don't last as long as they used to. There used to be movies would be in the theater for years. Now, you know, a few weeks if you're lucky, a couple of months if you're lucky. But at any rate, let me ask you something, honey. What were your expectations going into this film? How much did you know about the film before you went to see it?
Well, I just thought they were going to talk about what led up to the 9/11 disaster and what they had uncovered. That's all I thought it was about.
Did you know anything about Michael Moore beforehand, the guy who directed the film?
Not much. I only remembered him winning the Oscar for that one documentary he did about gun control. That was basically all I knew about him.
Bowling for Columbine, yeah. But you really, it's politics is not generally your forte, is it? You don't really, you know.
No, I tried to follow it, and I just don't have the mindset for it. It's just very confusing to me, and unfortunately, I basically just did what others told me, and I believed them.
Well, I hate to think that you're just believing what you believe because I'm telling you stuff, because I don't want you to think that way. I want you to have an independent mind. What was your first impression of the film? The first hints that you got that it was going to be something a little different than what you expected?
Well, in the beginning, it looked like it was going to be like a George Bush bashing type film, the way they were going about his election and how he got into office. And of course, they were doing it in a joking, funny kind of way. And I thought, oh, great, it's going to be one of these type of films.
And what made you change your mind?
Well, when the 9/11 thing actually happened, and they didn't show the disaster itself, but they were showing the reaction of all the people. That hit me a little hard, but the thing that hit me the most was when they were talking to that one mother who was a Republican. She was gung-ho for the war, you know, effort and everything, and she believed in that we were, you know, being threatened by Iraq. And then when her son died and she got his last letter, and in the letter he was telling her that, you know, that there was no reason for them to be there. These people were no threat. And, you know, Bush had lied to them, and that turned her around. And it hit me so hard because the movie was showing how they were recruiting poor people to you know, promising them, you know, the military is going to take care of you, you know, and these people who have nothing, of course, are being suckered in and joining the military and getting killed over there. And I have two sons who are going to be of age soon, and they're talking about the same thing, joining the military to pay for college and stuff. And I'm like, you know, the way they've got this war set up, there's no end to it, and I could lose my kids to this stupid war.
I should point out, by the way, that the lady said she considered herself a conservative Democrat, not really a Republican, but a conservative is a conservative. Now, You really cried your eyes out during that film. You almost feel like crying again now, don't you?
Yes, it really hit me hard.
Now let me ask you this. If this was a war like World War II, where there was a clear enemy and there was a clear understanding that there was a threat, and you know your kids got drafted or they signed up. A lot of people signed up in World War II. You know, whether they were drafted or not, they signed up because they felt it was the right thing to do. And let's just say, and I hate to say it this way, but for the sake of argument, that one of your children had passed away, had been killed in combat. While you would have felt sadness, you would still have supported the overall action.
Oh, yeah, definitely, because I would have known they didn't die for nothing. And I knew they died for our country. And unfortunately, these people who believe they're going over there for our country are not. They're just going in there to help all these companies get rich, and it's just really sickening. It just sickens my stomach.
Was there anything in the film that surprised you? Anything that you weren't aware of before that you learned because of the film?
I wasn't aware of the after the election about the blacks in Florida who were not allowed to vote, and all these people who protested it. And they couldn't get one lousy senator to sign their petition, and so therefore they couldn't get heard. Every time when they were bringing it up, you know, they were asked, "Well, did a senator sign it?" And the minute they heard no senator signed it, they're like, "Well, sit down then," you know. And I thought, I couldn't believe the number of people who were protesting and yet couldn't get any help. And I thought this is ridiculous, you know. I thought this was a free country. We all had the right to vote.
It really upset you, didn't it? I mean, you were really hit hard by it. I mean, we had to sit for about 5-10 minutes after the movie because you couldn't move. You were just crying in your seat there.
It really It really hurts to see what's going on over there, what these people are up against, and what hurts more is to know that they're dying for a cause that's not honorable. It's a disgrace, and it's just sad. All these kids are joining the military, you know, in hopes of a better future, and they're all dying instead, and they're not dying for a just cause. It's just sick.
In my most recent post, as I speak, I talked about John Edwards, who was running for the Senate. You guys know who John Edwards is. And he talked about there being two Americas, the one that does all the work and the ones that get all the money from it. And I think you can add to that that there are a group of Americans, mostly poor people like us, because I joined the military when I joined for economic reasons. And people like us sit there and we have to go out and fight the wars so that the rich can get richer. Do you think your family, some of whom are some pretty strong Bush supporters, do you think they'll ever see this film? And if they did, how do you think they would react to it?
I doubt any of them will go. And if they do decide to check it out just out of curiosity, I don't think they're going to believe much of what's said. I realize he does do some of it in a joking manner, but they'll just see it as, you know, propaganda, you know, just them trying to really hide the truth and make it look like, you know, the Republicans are the bad guys when they're not. And after all, they're the sinners, so they can lie and get away with it. And unfortunately, I think that's how most of my family will see the film.
Now, you consider yourself a pretty strong Christian, don't you?
Yes, I do.
And do you think that Jesus would support any of this war or anything that was going on along those lines?
No, I do not.
Even though it's being primarily run by people who call themselves Christians. And, in fact, George Bush was on television saying that he answers to, you know, Jesus, and, you know, he talks to God, and God tells him that he should be doing these things. Does that scare you, or does that make you, you know...
Yes, it does. It does scare me. He's listening to a false God. He obviously does not know God's voice, because I never saw anywhere in the Bible where God preached war, especially unnecessary war. I mean, if we were truly defending ourselves, I would not have a problem with this. But and I've not only in this movie, but I've been seeing it on the news how, you know, Iraq had nothing to do with it. It was like the Bin Laden and I can't think of the Al Qaeda. Yeah, the Al Qaeda that were behind all this. And I didn't know something else that was in the movie that I wasn't aware about was the fact that right after 9/11, we allowed all those people to leave who were, you know, related to the Bin Ladens and stuff. You know, we didn't question them like you would normally when a crime's been committed. You'd question everyone involved and everyone related or associated with the people involved. Instead, they were the only ones allowed to leave the country. Nobody else could move. Entire America was shut down except for them. They were allowed to leave, and that just doesn't seem right to me.
Now, you, when the 2000 election took place, you were in California at the time. That was before you had moved here.
Right, I honestly thought Bush had won honestly.
Yeah, and you also, you were going to vote for Bush, but I talked you out of it, and you wound up voting for Nader.
I just voted for whoever the third party was.
Yeah, it was Ralph Nader.
I basically gave up on both the Democrats and the Republicans. I got so sick of them bashing each other that I just said nobody seemed to be talking about issues, so I just didn't vote for either. I basically threw my vote away.
Did you? Well, actually, you were in California, which went pretty strong for Gore, so you didn't throw your vote away in that sense. But let me ask you this. Do you still kind of feel the same way? Do you still feel that it's mostly just people on the top just yelling back and forth at each other, and down here we're still getting kind of screwed over?
For the most part, yes.
Do you plan on voting for Kerry this time, or are you planning on voting for a third party or something else?
I'm really not sure right now. I know I'm not going to vote for Bush. I'm not really sure about Kerry. I want to wait a while and see his platform a little bit more and see his campaign a little bit more before I make a decision.
Now, you've been poor all your life.
All my life.
Now,
I've had to scrimp and save for everything.
Now, would you say that you're a hard worker?
Oh yes, I've worked very hard all my life, and my health is now paying for it.
And would you think that you deserve a little bit more money than what you've earned over these years after raising kids and being pretty much the sole supporter of your family? Would you say that you've earned a little bit more?
It does surprise me that how I have nothing really to show for all the years that I've worked. I always gave my best to my employees, which they always took advantage of. And I basically have nothing to show for it. I've lost everything because of the fact that I've pushed my body beyond its limits so many times that now it's falling apart and now I cannot work. And
you want to work, don't you?
I would rather earn my living. That's how I was raised. You know, you go to work, you earn your living. And my dad was able to do it. He was able to support our family. It wasn't until actually I was in high school to where my mom finally had to go out to work because finally my dad's paycheck just couldn't do it anymore. And I ended up, of course, losing my mom. She was hit and killed by a drunk driver on the way home from work one day. But I was always raised, you work hard, and I always did that, and I did my best to keep a roof over our heads and clothes on our backs and food on the table, and it was not always easy. There were times we went without a lot of things, but it does bother me that, you know, I contributed all this time. I worked very hard, and I ended up losing everything anyway. I have nothing now.
Well, you have me.
Yeah, except for you.
And we don't exactly live in a lap of luxury
here. I have you and God. It's about all I've got left.
And do you think God is going to have a few words for Mr. Bush and his supporters when judgment time comes? Granted, and you know that I don't necessarily believe that judgment is going to happen. You know how I feel about religion.
I think Bush is going to be like some of these people in the Bible who I've read who come up to Jesus and they tell him, you know, well, God, look, we did all this stuff in your name. And he's basically going to say, I do not know you, and I never knew you.
So, you feel that maybe your faith and the faith of your family had been taken advantage of a little bit by these people?
Yes.
I mean, that they'll say, yeah, we're men of God, so therefore you can trust whatever we do. And anybody who says anything else is Satan or is aligned with Satan, and you should just ignore them.
I actually heard someone say one time, he said, I can't really tell you how to vote, but I don't believe any Christian should ever vote Democrat.
How does that make you feel now?
Well, now I don't. At the time, I believed that, but now, of course, I don't. The only thing I knew about the Democrat Party was from what I learned from history.
Okay, I should say something here. When you say... Say it like that. You should say Democratic Party. When you say the Democrat Party, that's not a polite thing.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's I know you're not aware of that, but that's basically used by
The Democratic Party.
Yeah, but that's a term.
I only knew one alert from history, and that they were the ones who wanted slavery and stuff. So I always thought of them as, you know, the evil party, and I didn't realize that they had changed over the years.
Well, the 1932 was the big one when they became... Basically, they took the people who were progressives in the Republican Party, and there used to be progressives in the Republican Party. Theodore Roosevelt was a very progressive president, but basically, as the 20s, after World War I and the 20s moved on and everybody was making a lot of money, the Republicans, you know, cemented their hold as the party of the rich, and when Roosevelt took over in 1932, all of that changed, although there was still a measure of racism around the Democratic Party back then. You're worried about your kids.
I'm very worried about my children.
Would you, if they would start to seriously talk about putting a draft in, would you see about trying to get them out of the country somehow or keep them
if
from
I
going
still
in?
Had power over them, I would. Unfortunately, because of my declining health, I had to give up custody. And
also because of poverty, too.
And this is another thing that concerns me, because where they're at now, those people are also strong Republicans. And so I'm sure that they're not hearing anything on the other side. I'm sure all they're hearing is what Fox News says, and that's it.
Mm.
So that also worries me, because if I try to tell them anything, you know, they've already been blocked. They've already been brainwashed, and they're not going to hear what I have to say.
Do you think it's important, even if you would necessarily disagree with Macklemore's politics or may not like him personally, do you think people should go see this movie just to go see this movie?
Yes, I think everyone should go see this movie, you know, formulate your own opinion as to whether you think it's baloney or whether you think it's true. But to me, it looked like he had a lot of footage and documentation to back up what he was saying. So, but I think everyone should go see the movie and make their own judgment.
Were you surprised, by the way, that the one area, now the film was in kind of the back of the theater, and they had two theaters right next to each other that were in the far end, and the area was cordoned off, and you had to show your ticket stubs to get into that area. Did that surprise you a little bit?
Yes, that's never happened to me before. You know, usually once you walk into the gate, you know, the guy tears your ticket. That's it. You can roam around and go anywhere. And I've never had anyone standing out the door, that particular door of wherever that movie, to make sure you have a ticket to go in to see it.
You know, there are some people who think that we're turning into a police state. Does that bother you? Do you think maybe they're monitoring you or worried that you're going to cause trouble just because you're going to go see this movie? I mean, there are other movies that were popular. Someone said it's because they were sold out, but I've been to other popular movies before, and I've never seen anything like that before.
No, I never have either. That's the only other time that I know of that something like that went on was when the movie South Park came out. They wanted to make sure that you were of legal age to go in and see it. Okay. But otherwise, I've never seen that. Even with other R-rated movies, I've never seen anybody at the door to make sure no child gets in there.
All right. Well, of course, I'm not sure they were looking for children. There were a lot of young people in the audience there, weren't there?
Yeah, that kind of surprised me, but I was also glad to see it.
Yeah, I'm glad to see it, too. I think young people, especially those approaching draft age, need to see this film. What did you think? There was this one guy who was a soldier who was in an attack, and he was saying that he used to be a Republican, but now he's going to do everything he can to help the Democratic Party. Well, and people were applauding that. What did you think of the audience reaction? Did you think the audience was a little too overly enthusiastic? There was some applause at the end of it. I don't recall applause at the end of a movie before.
I was a little bit surprised at the audience's reaction, but I honestly really couldn't blame him. The parts where they did cheer and applause, I kind of wanted to too. I didn't because of the fact I was too choked up, worried about the people over there and the fact that my own kids might be joining them soon. But there were times when they showed stuff like that, and I was, you know, inside I was applauding.
Well, Kathy, I want to thank you for being on the show with me, and I know you're feeling a little upset again, and I'll let you go back to doing your jigsaw puzzle in the other room. And I'm going to end this here, partly because we've gone 20 minutes, which is about as much as I like to take, and also because I got to go to the bathroom. So we'll be right back with more. Sam, play us out.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show will be right back.
Welcome back to the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Again, that URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and my email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. Please write to me. I like to hear from you out there in the internet world, in this new technology that is changing the world. I want to thank my lovely wife, Kathy, for joining me. And she was having a hard time, as you heard, choking back the tears as she thinks about what might happen to her sons because of the Bush administration's policies and how it affects all working people. Remember that. And as I pointed out, John Edwards talked about two Americas, and I live in the second America. I live in the America that does the work and gets little of the rewards. And I remind everyone of what Teddy Roosevelt said about progress. And he said, progress can be defined as the constant struggle between those who possess more than they have earned and those who have earned more than they possess. And that is what's going on right now. My wife has certainly earned more than she has possessed. And the people in the Bush administration, and they certainly possess much more than they have ever truly earned, except for illegal activities and family connections and things like that. There was, one of the things about 9/11 is how the movie treated the media. And, of course, the right-wingers were trying to ban the movie completely. But the media is kind of reporting, well, you know, you nutty people, blah, blah, blah. And there have been some nasty reviews of it that were undeserved because they basically lied about what the film said. And they tried to say that there was a thing out of the, and it wasn't true. But, you know, of course, that wasn't true. Everything in that film was factual. In the Bart's Cop chat room, one handle started a thread basically saying that the press is acting like Fahrenheit 9/11 will be forgotten soon. And that because it came out now and not in, you know, September, October. But, of course, other people pointed out that it would be released as a DVD probably around September and would be available for rental probably before then. So there's going to be enough of this out there so that people can read. And from what I'm seeing in the newspapers, this thing is setting the record for a number of people seeing a documentary in U.S. history. It could be the biggest, it could be the biggest selling, or I don't know if that's not the right word. It could be the most watched documentary in the history of film. So we're looking forward to that. Certainly, Mr. Moore has raised the bar as far as that sort of thing is concerned. He really has matured into as a filmmaker. And actually, the shocking thing was Dale Earnhardt Jr., one of the drivers from NASCAR, which I don't, you know, particularly care much about, but he said that he instructed his crew to go out and see the film, whatever your political persuasion. And as you know, as my wife said, and as I asked my wife to say, I don't mean like coerce, but, you know, I asked her, you know, if she thought that everybody should go see the film, regardless of your political persuasion. She said, yes, definitely. And I happen to agree with that, of course. I think everybody should see this movie because it is something that people, you know, does have things that people should be aware of. But I wanted to talk about the press in here for a moment because I mentioned this before and I'm going to bring this up again, that the press live in a different world than we do. As I pointed out, as I have pointed out from time to time, 30 or 40 years ago, most people got their news from beat reporters, and beat reporters made roughly the same kind of money that everybody else made. You know, unless you were, you know, a rich businessman or something like that. And generally, if you were a working person in this country, a beat reporter made roughly the same amount as you did. And they were living in the same world as working people were. They weren't always perfect. I'm not saying they were. And they were guilty of screwing around with the news from time to time. Maybe not as bad as they are today, but they were. And certainly, there were times in the 20s and 30s before a lot of stuff got settled in that newspaper people just basically went berserk and said whatever they wanted to say. You know, the Philip Hearst newspapers were perfect example of the sensationalistic type papers. But generally speaking, those people made about the same amount of money as everybody else did, and they had an understanding of what was going on in the working people's world. And that was where most people got their news, from newspapers, from beat reporters. It was before television and before radio news was even that big. But nowadays, most people get their news from television, whether it's cable channel like CNN or Fox or regular nightly news from the networks. The people that work there, especially the reporters and the anchor people, they make a lot more money than your average person does. They are upper middle class at the very least. And certainly the TV anchors are upper class. They make you know, in the six figures a year easily. And that's Even the local ones make a very decent amount of money, if not in the six figures, very close to it. And that puts them at a completely different level than everyone else. And a lot of these people have gone through college. There are very few of the regular working class type people who go in there. The British have what they call news readers, and I wish we would do what they do. And basically, here in this country, the people who are the anchors of the news and stuff like that, they're kind of sort of expected to be reporters, so they're played up like that. Of course, what they're played up with really is being media celebrities, is what they are. But in Britain, they have people whose job it is to simply sit there and read the news. They don't do any reporting. They don't have anything to do with the content of the news. They simply read it, so they are not responsible for anything that is written down. The actual reporters can go out and do the actual reporting and not have to worry about who's the biggest pretty boy. Dan Rather is a great journalist, but the reason why he gets to be an anchor is because he looks decent and has a decent voice. I'm not saying that he has bad journalistic skills or bad reporting skills, but that's the reason he gets to be on camera and be the big face of it, to be the face of the news. That's why. and he gets paid a lot of money. Does he understand the problems I'm going through? Probably not. I don't know if he ever had to be in my position in any time during his life. Of course, he grew up in an era where if somebody worked, they could support themselves. Here, as I mentioned on Air America, I make $12.50 an hour. I can't support myself. I can barely support myself, I should say. I'm doing a little better now than I have been for a long time, but for the most part, I don't have any big money coming in, and I can't expect any big money. I know people who are consultants and stuff like that, and they start a job, and they can expect a $3,000 or $4,000 check for their first month's work, you know, or their first week's work, excuse me. And I don't, you know, I can't comprehend that. I'm lucky to make about $2,000, $3,000 a month that I'm making now. And, you know, that's not very much when you consider all my expenses. So it's very difficult to get the press to tell a story and be honest about what they're talking about in the sense of trying to cover everything from our point of view when they don't understand our point of view, when they've never come from where we are. A lot of them just grew up in very good circumstances. I'm sure there are a few out there that are like that. Certainly my sister, who works for Newsweek, who, by the way, I'm also going to try to interview for the show so people can have an idea of what goes on. Now, she, granted, you know, I don't know exactly how much she makes, but she does a lot better than I do. And she started out as poor working class, single mother, and she worked her way through college and stuff like that. And that's fine. And I'm sure there are other people that are like her that have done that. Of course, my sister doesn't write news in the sense of, you know, hard news. She works in the entertainment division. And again, that's fine. I don't have any problem with reporters or journalists in general. But my point is that the news that we're getting is from sources that are very skewed. People who have a stake in the economic policies of the, if not the Bush administration, the upper levels of the Democratic administration. And I get that same problem all along when I'm talking with high gear left-wingers, too. They live in their own little world. And it's a lot of fighting up here between two groups of people who are very, very rich and wealthy. And all of us are forgotten. I talked about this in my smart asses and high horses type of deal. The Republicans are a bunch of smart asses, and they think they're better than everybody else. And they're jerks about it. The Democrats are less jerks about it, but you know what? They're high horses because they think they really are above everything else, just like the Republicans are. They don't treat things the same way as the Republicans do, but basically they do look down on us. They may be more polite about it, but they look down on us just as much as the Republicans do. I don't know if Senator Kerry is like that or not. Quite frankly, I don't care. I'd vote for my Uncle Vito to be president before I'd vote for George W. Bush. I happen to like my Uncle Vito a lot better anyway. I'd vote for a known criminal, a petty criminal, rather than someone like Bush. At least they might be not so capable of doing all the crap that Mr. Bush is doing. It's just disgusting to see how the wealth in this country, whether it's the wealth on the left or the wealth on the right, just treat working people like crap. And we're the ones who are paying the price for all of this stuff. How much will change under John Kerry if John Kerry gets elected president? Certainly the media coverage isn't going to change because they're going to go hard on him. They're going to go much harder on him than they ever were on Bush. Maybe they feel like it's necessary to do that because the Republicans and the right-wing hate machine has been railing against the liberal press for years, and the liberal press is kind of trying to bend over backwards to make it seem like they're not. But, of course, the press has its own right-wingers that are there spouting their views. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to tell Bill Sapphire and David Brooks that, you know, they're part of a liberal press. Sapphire is as conservative as you can get, pretty much. And so is Mr. Brooks. And so are people like Bill O'Reilly and Ann Coulter, who have regular columns and are given the chance for a public forum. And O'Reilly and Coulter in particular are two of the most egregious examples of just right-wing hysteria and right-wing bullshit that you're going to get on the air. And mind you, I don't want the media to take to go from being right-wing bullshit to left-wing bullshit. I'd just rather it to be honest bullshit. Excuse me. Honest bullshit. Had to get a drink there. Throat gets dry. I don't know what you mean by honest bullshit, but I think you understand what I'm talking about. Just tell us the fucking facts. Just tell us what the truth is. I had an analogy about that where it's the old question about whether if you drop a bowling ball and a marble from the same distance, which will hit first? Now, you could say the argument is one guy One guy will say, well, the bowling ball will hit first because it's heavier. And that makes a lot of sense. The bowling ball's a lot heavier than a marble. And another guy will make a comment about, well, whether the bowling ball hits first or not, you know, they're both equal, blah, 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 blah. The truth of the matter is they both hit the ground at the same time because that's the fucking laws of gravity. That's how gravity works, okay? But the thing about it is you could have two groups of people arguing about it endlessly, and the media's job is to sit there and to drop the bowling ball on the marble and say, this is what happened. And not just simply say, well, this guy has a better argument, and some people say that the bowling ball will hit first, and other people will say they're both at the same time. Other people think the marble will hit the ground first. That's not reporting. That's not telling the fucking truth. That's just gossip. That's all it fucking is gossip. And that's what we're getting from the news media, and the reason we're getting it from the news media like that is because they don't live in the same fucking world that we do. And the money that they make also enslaves them because they don't want to lose that big salary. They want to make the same kind of money they've been making because they have a bigger lifestyle than we do. Now, if by some miracle I get a job on a radio station where I am making that kind of money, $90,000, $100,000 a year, will I change? I don't know. I hope not. I hope not. Because I really want to be the same type of person that I always have been. Maybe eat out a lot more. Because I like eating out, although I do enjoy cooking as well. But the truth of the matter is that I've never made that kind of money before, so I really have no idea. I think I mentioned 23.5 is the most I've ever made in a year in my life. And I'm never going to exceed that, it seems, the way I'm going now. And, you know, I wouldn't mind making more, and I wouldn't mind doing this for a living, but I'm not going to let it change who I am and what I do. One of the things I pointed out in the comment section of my blog is that one of my idols is Fran Drescher from The Nanny. Not because I'm a huge fan of her in particular, but because I admire the fact that she was told for years that it was her voice that would keep her from being a star. And she never gave up on that. And she made her voice into something unique. She said her attitude was, this is what makes me unique. This is what makes me stand out. And my voice and my way of talking, Joe Vecchio's way of talking, is what makes me stand out. It makes me stand out from all the professional radio jocks. It makes me stand out from all the other talk show hosts. It makes me stand out from everybody in the news media. Because these people are all professional, polished, college-educated people. When I fucking say I'm the voice of the working man, I fucking mean it. I am the voice of the working man because I am a working man. I am down there in the trenches with everybody else. I am not saying I am the most physical guy in the world. You won't see me on any construction sites. Not because I don't like hard work. It's because my body simply can't handle it. But I work pretty hard for what I do. I am down there, and I have to go to work every single fucking day. So if I miss a couple of days, like I had to miss with the doctor's appointment, it hurts me. It affects me. I remember reading an article once about, you know, if you're a wealthy person and you get a flat tire, then it's just an inconvenience for you. You got to call in on your cell phone and say you're going to be late. But for some people, that can be a devastating life experience because they just don't have the extra money to get that taken care of. Just like if something nasty were to happen to my car and I needed to get it fixed, I would not have the money to get it taken care of. Or I'd have to go into debt or figure out some way of getting it done. And that's sad. And it really shouldn't be that way for someone who's working for a living. It really shouldn't. Anyway, let me wrap this thing up. Once again, my website is cupojoe.blogspot.com. You don't need a www, although you can throw that in there anyway. My email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. Please write to me. I like hearing from you. I like hearing from people. It gives me something to talk about on the show, and just wanted to say thanks to everybody for listening, and I will see you next time on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Bye. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe Radio Show, is proud to be a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 2127. However, the views of Joe Vecchio do not necessarily represent the views of Local 2127, the IBEW, or its affiliate, the AFL-CIO. Please remember to support your working brothers and sisters and help keep the American dream alive. The Cup of Joe Radio Show has been a production of Jove Enterprises, Incorporated.